It's the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer Kent, and we're talking about some crazy things that have really happened. It's an hour of history for kids with Mick Sullivan. Mick hosts the Past and the Curious podcast for kids. He's also co-chair of a group of people who make podcasts for young people. It's called Kids Listen. And he wrote the book, The Meat Shower, The Mostly True Tale of an Odd and Somewhat Edible Occurrence. Mick, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hello, thank you for having me, and hello, Wisconsin.
And as we talk with Mick, we're also playing a game about some incredible happenings in history. We are exercising our minds with a little bit of trivia.
It's quiz time. It's quiz time. It's quiz time. Time, time.
Hey, Mick, what's our first question today?
Yes, the Ideal Toy Company was founded by a man named Morris Mictum after he succeeded immensely with a thing he invented or promoted called the teddy bear. The last successful toy for the Ideal Toy Company was actually imported from Hungary, where it was called the Magic Cube. What was the name of the toy in America?
Ooh, all right, kids. The number to call is 800-642-1234. You can use that number to tell us your guess to Mick's question about what the Magic Cube was named in America. You can also use that number to tell us what awesome fact you know about history, or who's your favorite person in history. What's the coolest artifact you've seen or heard about? Let's talk about it. The phone number again is 800-642-1234. Mick, as we wait for those answers and the cool ideas about history that the kids listening today know, you have a history podcast. You also work at a history museum, but that all happened in the past. Why should we care about history?
There are so many great stories that apply to our lives, and we can find such great inspiration, or we can just find great answers to why we are in the present now, like why what's going on came to be. Because at any given point, things could have changed. Anyone else could have been elected president, or a war could have gone a different way, or somebody could have never invented the stop. Like, all of those things are just marvelous to think about, and it really helps keep our world in perspective. Plus, there's just so many inspirational figures that I try to shine a light on. It goes on forever.
And I will just admit right off the top that there are things we're talking about today that I had to learn about to even have the conversation with you. So let's start. Speaking of surprising stories, one of your favorite episodes features someone named Ezra Lee and a submarine called the Turtle. Tell us more.
Yeah. Yeah. This was during the Revolutionary War. A lot of people don't realize because it wasn't a big thing in the history books. It's just a footnote, really. But somebody tried to invent this. Well, they did invent it, and they tried to use this very early submarine. It was basically like, it looked like a giant acorn, and they made it kind of like how you would make a barrel, like with wood overlapping and curved. And there was a person who got inside of this, and there wasn't an engine. There were just like foot pedals and levers that you would pull, and he had to pedal and pedal and pedal. His name was Ezra Lee, and it was hot and cramped in there, and two flippers on the, or a propeller on the back would push it through, and the idea was that he would go through New York Harbor in the middle of the night because there was a ship that belonged to the admiral who was in charge of the British Army, who, of course, they were trying to defeat, or at least get them to leave. And so he was going to go in the middle of the night, and he was going to drill a hole in the ship and attach an explosive to it. It didn't work, and he had to abandon and abort the mission. But it's such a hilarious story, and it's such an interesting thing because that submarine came, you know, almost 100 years before anything functional came about. But somebody tried to do that. Somebody took that risk.
And you have a whole song about Ezra Lee and the Turtle. Let's hear some of that.
Ground control to Sergeant Lee.
7, 6.
The water's so dark you can't see.
3, 2.
Start your cranking so you move your boat with speed.
what do you hope that people hear in those songs that they can take away and we can better understand those stories?
Well, obviously, that's it. For people who know, that's actually a David Bowie song about an astronaut going to space, which I parodied because it just felt like the same sort of risk at the time. This guy getting in the submarine, encountering who knows what and taking great risk. So really, I wanted it to do two things. One, I wanted it to be funny. I wanted it to speak to kids and parents, because parents might know that song. Kids can just listen to the song and help put it together. I think it's important to hear stories in a lot of different ways. So if you know a little bit about something that you've read, like you've read a book about something, and then you see a movie about it, or you watch a YouTube video, or you watch a cartoon about it, or you hear a song about it, then you know it so much more deeply. Like it really speaks to you on another level. It's just a matter of giving people a new way to experience things. And plus, I think it's just kind of goofy, and I always like to have a little bit of fun when I'm telling these stories.
Yeah, it gets stuck in your head a little bit.
Definitely, especially as the song goes on.
Yeah. We're talking with Mick Sullivan, who hosts the podcast The Past and the Curious, and it's all about history. And we're talking with you kids. You can join our conversation. Ask Mick a question at 800-642-1234. What do you imagine people lived like a long time ago, like hundreds or thousands of years ago? Do you think they were really different from us or really the same? Maybe you know some awesome fact from history that you want to share. You can call us now at 800-642-1234, and you can talk with Mick about what's on your mind. Mick, your podcast covers all kinds of history from different eras and people, really everything. When you're researching things for the show, do you find things that surprise you still?
Oh, every day, I swear. There's always something. And that goes back to your original question. It's why there's just so many great stories, and it's just marvelous. I actually just discovered a story this week about a woman named Ada Blackjack, who was, she was Inupiat. She was Native American in Alaska. And she went on this exploration mission to Wrangel Island, which is north of Siberia. It's really, really, really cold. This was the 1800s. And the rest of her party didn't survive, but she survived for 2 years and just did these incredible things. And you just hear a story like that, and it's hard not to feel moved. And yeah, there's always a surprise every time I open a book.
Wow. Now, we are doing some trivia questions throughout the hour to keep our brains working a little bit. And Mick, our first trivia question was, one of the last successful toys for the Ideal Toy Company was imported from Hungary, where it was called the Magic Cube. What was the name of the toy in America? And we have to know the answer. What is it?
Well, it was the Rubik's Cube, which is named after its inventor, Erno Rubik. He was actually a sculptor and a professor of architecture, which makes sense when you think about it, right? Hmm. Some people estimate that at the height of its craze, in the early 80s, like back when I was born, there were over 2 million of those puzzle cubes, Rubik's cubes, sold.
Wow.
I have never solved one. I've never been able to, but I've actually seen some kids do it.
I can't. My 16-year-old brother does all of them. My dad can do it. My brain just doesn't work that way. So the Rubik's Cube. Thanks for that, Mick. If you're listening and that was your guess, congratulations. If not, no worries. You've now learned it. And we've got some more questions ahead here on The Morning Show. We're talking with Mick Sullivan, who hosts a history podcast for kids. You can call us with your questions or your cool, fun facts, things you know about history that you want other kids to know about. 800-642-1234. I'm Keeley Voltina, and this is the Ideas Network. Thanks for being here with us on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keeley Voltina. This is a show about history for kids. And what fun would it be without a little friendly competition? Our guest this morning is author and podcaster Mick Sullivan, who loves talking about the past. And I think I hear something.
It's quiz time. It's quiz time. It's quiz time. Time.
Oh, yeah, Mick, this continues throughout the show. It is time for our next trivia question. What are we figuring out this time?
All right, this is from an episode we did called Robert Smalls and Basketballs. Do you know which cartoon featuring a team of crime solvers and their accidentally helpful dog featured the Harlem Globetrotters as guest stars several times?
All right, you heard the question. Think you know the answer? The number to call is 800-642-1234. Kids, you can use that number to call and tell us what you think the answer is. You can also let us know, do you know any songs about history or about people who sang them a long time ago? We have an historian with us. What are your questions about history? 800-642-1234 is the number to call again. And if you've got a question, you can also send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Mick, as we think about what the answer to that question might be, we should really talk about the Great Kentucky Meat Shower of 1876.
Oh, yeah. Please.
Where do we start?
Well, we start on March 3rd, 1876, when out of nowhere, on a farm in Bath County, Kentucky, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere, but it's close to one major city, just without explanation, chunks of meat started falling from the sky. And nobody knew why. It was 1876, so it's not like an airplane was flying over or anything like that. And what's super amazing about this is that no one has ever figured it out still to this day. No one knows why. And it involves one family in particular. The Crouch family. Mrs. Crouch was actually busy making soap in her yard and it started falling all around her. And her neighbors saw, her husband was aware of what was going on, and it covered the space of about a football field in size. And before long, like newspapers, like even from like the New York Times, the New York Herald, they sent reporters down to Bath County, Kentucky to figure out what it was. And they sent samples. Some people like even tried to eat it to try to figure out what it was. But no answer was ever decided on. And there is only one remaining specimen anywhere in the world. It's actually in a jar of formaldehyde or some other like preserving chemical at Transylvania University, which is in Lexington, Kentucky.
There's some real bravery in having meat fall from the sky and trying to eat it to see what it is. I am no expert, but I would not recommend that.
I would not either.
So let's just put that out there as a public service announcement that if something like that happens again or we figure out the answer to that, let's not go in that direction. So it's good to know, though, and a really interesting case that has been a mystery for 144 years now.
Yeah, I think that's what's so amazing about it is, you know, there were all sorts of mysterious things that happened throughout time. And science, in all its wisdom and amazing ability, has explained most of those things, which is great. It's good to understand the world and understand why things happen. But I still think it's really cool that something this strange happened and no one ever figured it out. And because of that, we get to wonder, like we get to come up with our own scenarios of, well, how did this happen? What made this happen? And to me, that's magical because it just opens up so much space for imagination around a really weird thing.
And I think sometimes, kids and adults, we think about the fact that, you know, we're operating with technology, we've learned so much, and so it just seems like we should be able to figure it out. Sure, in the past, they didn't have the same things we did, and now we're sitting here with advancements in technology and understanding, but we still don't know.
We don't. In fact, the one piece of meat that they do have, when I did the book release for the book that I wrote, they let the museum where I work in Louisville borrow it. So we actually had the piece of meat here. And it was weird because we almost didn't get it in. Well, yeah, I mean, it looked like a little chunk of bacon. It was really weird. But we almost didn't get it in time because it had been sent to England, to London, I believe, for some gene sequencing, because like they're still interested in trying to figure out what it is. But I think because of whatever chemical it's been in for so long, it had really deteriorated to the point that I still don't think that they're going to get a definitive answer. So on one hand, it makes me sad that we'll never know, but also even like maybe outweighing that significantly is that we will never know. And so it's just one surviving mystery to wonder about.
Yeah. We're talking with Mick Sullivan, who hosts the podcast, The Past and the Curious. It's about history for kids. And kids, there's a line for you. You can call us at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite person who's ever lived? Or maybe your favorite period of time, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. Maybe it was just a bit ago. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can talk with us about what you imagine people lived like, or ask your question, because Mick is an historian. We can see if we can get you the answer to what you're wondering. That number again, 800-642-1234. And Mick, we are doing some trivia throughout the hour of our conversation here. And if you could remind us of the trivia question that you just gave us.
Yes. Do you know which cartoon featuring a team of crime solvers and their accidentally helpful dog featured the Harlem Globetrotters as guest stars on several episodes?
All right. And we are asking kids, but grown-ups can play this game, too, if we don't get kids ready to answer it. And Bill in Superior is on the line. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. Do you know the answer?
Scooby-Doo. I watched it many times.
Mick, is he right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah. They
Yeah, Bill, do you remember it?
I do. I just as a 5, 6, 7, 8 year old watching it on TV on Saturday morning when I was a kid. Oh, yeah, Scooby-Doo and the Harlem Globetrotters.
All right, excellent. Bill, thanks for your call, stepping up to help answer our trivia question. What else should we know about Scooby-Doo? We've entered into cartoon territory, Mick.
I don't know a lot about Scooby-Doo. But I do have an episode, one of my favorites, about one of the very first cartoons. It was kind of in the vaudeville era, and this guy, well, it was a dinosaur, and her name was Gertie, and the guy who invented it was named Winslow McKay. He was a cartoonist, but he did it during vaudeville era, so he projected it onto the screen, and it was this line drawing of this brontosaurus, and she would come out, and he would stand on stage and say, "Hi, say hello, Gertie," and she would wave and do all sorts of stuff. And you can actually find the video on YouTube, and it is fascinating to watch. It's actually really entertaining. Gertie the dinosaur. So that'd be the very first interactive cartoon.
What's different about that than what we see now?
Well, it was designed for a live audience. Mm. This wasn't a time period where you could just turn your TV on or go to the movie theater. It was sandwiched in between dancers and singers. And the first time that it happened, no one had ever seen such a thing. No one had ever seen a moving image that wasn't captured from real life, like a movie. But an actual animation projected on screen. And I think what made it more amazing to people was that the dinosaur drawing and the narrator, who was standing there in real life, seemed mm-hmm. to be interacting. So it was a really clever, clever approach.
Oh, how neat. And so far away from the fact that my kids struggle to understand that the programming on PBS Kids just happens and you can't jump forward or go back to a section of it. We've gone several degrees, I think, from the live performance of that cartoon.
Yes, very far. Things have come a long way.
We're talking with Mick Sullivan, who hosts a podcast about history aimed at kids. It's called The Past and the Curious, and we are talking about it all hour here on The Morning Show. And you can call us with your questions. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. We're taking questions from kids wherever you're listening, and we're talking about anything in history. What do you want to know about history? Or maybe you love learning about the past and you have some fun facts you'd like to share with our guest. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. Maybe you know about something crazy or unique or cool, or maybe something that was kind of sad that you learned about. Tell us how you think about it and how, describe it for us. 800-642-1234. Our Hour of History for Kids continues here on The Morning Show. Up next is news, and I'm Keeley Boltina. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Here on the Ideas Network, we're spending this hour talking about history with kids, and we adults are learning some tidbits along the way. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keeley Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Mick Sullivan hosts a history podcast for young people. He's our guest and our trivia master.
It's quiz time. It's quiz time. It's quiz time. Time, time.
Hey, Mick, what's our next brain buster?
Here we go. This is from an episode we did that featured Tycho Brahe, who is an astronomer who famously was missing part of his nose. Here's the question. Galileo was an astronomer who built upon the works of Tycho Brahe, though he had the advantage of using a telescope. Now, do you know what part of Galileo's body is displayed at the Florence History of Science Museum?
What could the answer be? You tell us. Call 800-642-1234. Dial that number to tell Mick your guess. You can also ask other questions or share your favorite things that you know about history. What's an awesome fact you know? We want to hear it. 800-642-1234. We've got John from Brown Deer ready to join the conversation. Good morning, John.
Good morning, and thank you for answering my call. I'd just like to know if the guest knows of a show from early television, maybe around the give or take 2 or 3 years from 1950, called The Winky Dink Show, or something that featured a character called Winky Dink.
John, thanks for pulling that from your memory. I know you cover a lot of different things in history. Mick, is that anything you've come across?
That is not. I don't know. I don't have any awareness of that. It sounds very interesting. Our history goes well into the 60s. I mean, we've done shows about a musician named Sonny Rollins, who's actually still alive. I would like to know that and know more.
Well,
I definitely have a fascination with old TV.
Yeah, maybe it's something you can add to your list. I am not familiar with it either. Did a quick internet search, and it sounds like Winky Dink and You was a children's show on CBS from 1953 to 1956. So it predates maybe some of the shows that you've been doing lately, Mick, but certainly an option. So thanks for bringing that up with us, John. Could be really interesting. All right. And now we have Wendy from Fort Atkinson, who is also on the line. Hey, Wendy.
Hey. The reason I'm calling is the way that I introduce my kids to history, and this will date me a little bit, but I've got CDs, or DVDs, excuse me, of the old Schoolhouse Rock series that I grew up watching and learned how many of the songs and, you know, can sing Conjunction Junction or Great American Melting Pot or whatever. and let my kids watch them because they're still very relevant today, and they're in a simple language that they can understand. And my kids are now teenagers, and my 15-year-old son is fascinated by history and can probably tell me more strange facts about World War II or the Art of War or the way this famous person or that famous person died. It's pretty amazing. So, but it was just an easy, fun way to get them interested in history and all that good stuff.
Oh, Wendy, thanks for sharing. And Mick, Wendy is really hitting on that idea that you agree with, that that there's this music and that can help make connections with us when we're learning things.
Absolutely. Schoolhouse Rock is very, yeah, I never even considered that that was an influence in what I'm doing. But it absolutely is, because that was a tone setter. It was taking, exactly like she said, taking simple language, which is something I try to do with the show as I craft the scripts, like taking simple language and putting in humor and then wrapping it up in some music too that is going to be catchy and stick in your head. That's how you hold on to things.
Yeah, we'll continue talking about this as we highlight some more of the conversations that you've had on your podcast, Mick. We do have a couple of people who want to take a guess at your question.
Awesome.
About what part of Galileo's body is displayed at the Florence History of Science Museum. That's what we're going with, right?
Yep.
All right, let's hear from Tim in Eau Claire. Tim, what are you thinking?
Well, I was thinking brain. And also, like I told the screener, when I was a kid, my dad told me that Plymouth Rock, where the Pilgrims landed, they knew exactly where they were, but they were running low on supplies, specifically beer. So they made a beer run.
Tim, thank you for that. Okay, so we have two things here. Anything you want to say about Plymouth Rock, Mick?
You know, I don't have really anything to add to that. That's actually on my list of shows to develop, and I have read Nathaniel Philbrick's book about it, which is a really great one. But I'd rather get to that question, because brain is such a good guess. But it is not the right answer.
Okay. All right, Tim, keep listening. We'll have some more kids and grown-ups take a stab at this question and see if we can't get to the right answer yet during this segment of our show. John from Madison wants to take a guess. Hey, John.
Hello. I would like to guess his eye.
Mick?
Also a good guess. Also not the right answer.
Oh, all right. Okay, so not the
eye,
not the brain. John, thanks for your guess. Thanks for listening. We'll figure it out yet in the next few minutes. We're talking with Mick Sullivan, who hosts the podcast The Past and the Curious, which is all about history. And we're talking about history, taking your calls. And kids, if you've got a question or want to share a cool story you know about history, you can dial 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk about polymaths. Polymaths are people who can do pretty much anything, and they do it better than most people. Is that right?
Yeah, you can be really good at, like, there's a lot of people walking around that are experts at something, that are just the, like, some of the best at what they do. But there are also the occasional polymath, which are people who are that level of good at lots of different things. It's like, I wish I could be that.
Right. Leonardo da Vinci, probably the most familiar to us. But there are some others that aren't as well known, like Ziryab, who lived in medieval Iraq and Spain over 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, this guy is really awesome. And because he lived so long ago, it's hard to separate the legend from the reality in this case. But there's a lot of compelling evidence and really awesome stories about some of the things that he was able to accomplish. First off, he was a scientist, an astronomer in his early training, but he was also a musician, and he was such a good musician that the teacher that he was a student under got mad at him because he was so good, and the ruler preferred his music to him. So he said, "You should probably leave Iraq," and so he actually relocated to Al-Andalus in Spain, which was the Muslim-controlled part of Spain in medieval era. And there he became like a cultural trendsetter. Like, he was a rock star. He looked around, and this was medieval Europe, and you know, people have a lot of ideas about like how life was at that time. And for the most part, they're right. where there was knowledge and books and food of all flavors. But he is generally regarded as being the person who set the standard for having a three-course meal. Instead of just having all of your food at once or even mixing it all together, he said, we'll eat soup, we'll eat the main course, and then, of course, every kid's favorite, we'll eat dessert, right? We'll just have it like that. He was also a big advocate and, again, like, set the trend to, you know, we should take baths every day, or at least, you know, more frequently than once a month or a couple times a year. And also, nowadays, we have a wardrobe that we wear in the summer, and we have a wardrobe that we wear in the winter. That wasn't the case necessarily then. So he was a big proponent and pushed people into that. So now we have lighter cotton linen clothes that we wear in the spring. And traditionally, those are made of lighter color fabrics. And then in the winter, of course, we wear heavier wools and that sort of stuff. And that was largely his risk because of him. And in addition to all of that, there was actually a music school. He helped create the more modern version of the oud, which is a medieval instrument, or I'm sorry, is a Middle Eastern instrument, very much like the guitar, which in its current state is basically identical to how he modified his with five strings.
Interesting. And, we actually have we can hear that sound of what an oud sounds like. Let's listen. Yeah, so you can hear that guitar sound, but with other influences.
Yes, absolutely. And he actually, one of the other lasting gifts that he gave to the world is he founded a music school in Cordoba, Spain, which for centuries, I mean, was still training musicians. I think up until the 1900s. And Cordoba is, of course, very, very famous for its gifts to classical guitar, and he had a lot to do with that. So it's just a fascinating story of a fascinating man who had his hand in everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So much there. And certainly as we are learning about different things, we want to make sure that we get the answer to our trivia question in this part of the conversation. And the question that we are looking to answer is, again, what, Mick?
So Galileo was a famous astronomer. Of course, I related him to Tycho Brahe, but that doesn't matter. About Galileo, do you know what part of his body, Galileo's body, is on display at the Florence History of Science Museum?
All right, we've got Tony from Appleton who wants to take a guess. What do you think, Tony?
Well, just like this last person he was talking about who had his hand in everything, Galileo has a finger at the museum.
Oh, Tony, you went there.
Yes, that is perfect. That's correct.
Congratulations, Tony. You got it right. We are talking with Mick Sullivan, who hosts the podcast The Past and the Curious, all about history, weaving in a little bit of trivia along the way. Kids and adults, you can call us with your questions, 800-642-1234. Hey, kids, what piece of trivia do you know about history that you want to share with us? What question is burning a hole in your mind so we can try to figure it out together? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. I'm Keely Voltina, and this conversation continues here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, and these are our final minutes with podcaster, author, and history buff Mick Sullivan. And we have one more trivia question ready for our kid listeners. Are you ready?
It's quiz time.
Yeah.
It's quiz time. It's quiz time. Time, time.
Hey, you put together the song. We play it, Mick. What is the final question we hope we can answer?
Well, this question will best be answered by someone who listens to the show, but someone might guess it. I don't know. So in 1939, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt hosted the King and Queen of England for the very first time that the King and Queen ever came to America. One of the events was a night of music, And one of the performers was a band, which was from Kentucky, which is where I'm from. They were known as the Coon Creek Girls. And the song in particular that FDR wanted to hear, and it was about a food. Now, I sang the song on an episode, but it's a really funny song about a food. So what food song, what piece of food, what type of food did FDR want to hear a song about?
That is a really interesting question. We have time for your answer to it. Take a guess. You won't know if you're right unless you try. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Use that number to call. Tell us what you think the answer is, or help us understand what bit of trivia, what bit of history you want other people to know about. That phone number again is 800-642-1234. Let's talk a little bit about Lewis and Clark. Mick, remind us who Lewis and Clark were and why they wanted to go on an 8,000-mile trip.
Yeah, that was a crazy thing to tackle. It was a group. There were two leaders, William Clark and Meriwether Lewis, and they assembled a group of about 30 men, and then they picked up some people on the way, including the famous Sacagawea, and they traveled from the Midwest all the way to the Pacific Ocean. And their original goals were to find a way to sail across the United States. They hoped that there was a waterway that could get them from the Mississippi River to the Pacific Ocean, which of course there's not, but they tried. And then there were other things too. They were going to meet Native American tribes and try to open up trade lines. And then additionally, there was all sorts of science, things to learn, plants to discover, well, not discover, but plants to catalog and animals to encounter that European settlers had not encountered before.
And Lewis and Clark got a crash course in first aid from someone named Dr. Benjamin Rush. Gave Lewis and Clark, you wrote a song about Dr. Rush, what he gave Lewis and Clark to bring with them on their trip, and let's listen to that.
Take Dr. Rush's thunderclapper pills. Be careful you don't mess your pants. Take Dr. Rush's thunderclapper pills to the woods to fertilize some plants.
Okay, so Dr. Rush's thunderclapper pills, what did they have in them and how do we know?
Well, Dr. Rush taught them about these. Dr. Rush, by the way, was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. He's a very interesting fellow. And he gave them these pills as a cure-all for many illnesses that they might be afflicted with. And there were many that they were. It had mercury, which is really, really bad for you. It's a heavy metal. It's very dangerous. And it also had jalap, which both of those things on their own are, they make you have diarrhea. And when you put them together, they really make you have diarrhea. And so the idea was that if you had something in you that was making you sick, you would take these and it would just flush your system out really, 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 really fast, which is why they called them Dr. Rush's thunderclapper pills, because it was like a bolt of lightning just going right through you.
How clever. History, not always pretty. We can admit that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yeah, no, but the interesting thing about it, though, is because it had mercury in it, it doesn't really flush from the ground. So there have been scientists mm-hmm. who've been able to go back and find with relative certainty that Lewis and Clark maybe spent a night here. More so, one of their men probably took a thunderclapper pill here because that came out with everything else is still in the ground.
The mercury. Wow. Fascinating. We are talking with Mick Sullivan, who hosts the podcast The Past and the Curious, all about history for kids. And we are taking your call. Rachel from West Allis wants to talk with us about a piece of history. Hey, Rachel.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am calling because as a child, I was super fascinated by mummies, and I actually studied archaeology in college, but as of right now, I am a librarian. And a couple months ago, I picked up this excellent children's book about mummies called Mummies Exposed. I don't remember the author, but it was published in 2019 or 2020, and it's great for the middle school audience. And I, as an adult, I enjoyed it, and I learned so much. It was fabulous, and I enjoyed it so much that now I'm reading these big, heavy adult books about the mummies of the Tarim Basin in western China and the Siberian ice princess from the Altai Mountains. And so I think it's a great kids book for kids, but also a great kids book for adults, and that's Mummies Exposed. So kids' history can be a great entree for adults.
Hey, Rachel, thank you so much for that recommendation. And Mick, Mummies, ever fascinating.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've done a couple episodes that feature mummies, too. We did a holiday episode about mail order catalogs. And there was actually in the 70s or 80s, there was a mail order catalog that actually sold a mummy from ancient Egypt, which is just crazy to think about. But more exciting, we did an episode about Ötzi, the Iceman from the Alps, which he was probably the most well-preserved specimen. He got trapped in ice for centuries and centuries and centuries. And it's amazing because when he thawed out, I mean, some people found him while they were hiking, which was probably a pretty scary thing to come upon.
Yeah.
But when he thawed out, they couldn't decide where the border was between Austria and Italy. So there was actually a pretty big dispute over this mummy's body. And he wound up in Italy. He's there. You can visit him. But yeah. Oh, so fascinating. So I'd point out to the caller's point, children's history books, I think, are always the best place to start. Like, it's always a great way to get into a subject, get an interesting perspective, and then dive deeper, like she said. That's a wonderful approach.
Oh, neat. And we do want to make sure that we get in the answer to our last trivia question. The question was, in 1939, President Franklin Roosevelt hosted the King and Queen of England, and he needed a song written about a specific kind of food. We've got Carrie from Mequon who wants to take a guess. What do you think, Carrie? Hey, Carrie, you're there? All right, we'll try.
Hello. Oh,
yeah, hi. What's your guess about the food that they wanted the song written about?
Hi, this is Terry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And,
thanks.
And yes, we have no bananas.
Bananas. Okay. Mick, is Carrie right? Terry right.
That's a great answer. That is not the right answer, though.
Okay, what's
I'd
the
love
right
to
one?
Hear that song.
Just tell us what it is.
Yeah, it's biscuits. It's biscuits. The song was actually called How Many Biscuits Can You Eat? And it's the same melody as like Crawdad Hole. It's like, how many biscuits can you eat this morning? And then the final answer is always 49 and a ham of meat.
Okay. That sounds like a very unique song. And I don't think I ever would have gotten to biscuits as the answer.
If you can imagine the King and Queen of England sitting next to the President and First Lady listening to that song, it's I think it had to be a pretty amazing moment to witness.
I think we should just stop with that imagery right now. Let that be the last thing that is in our brains. Mick, thank you so much for such a fun conversation. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was really great to be with you.
Mick Sullivan hosts The Past and the Curious podcast for kids. He's also co-chair of a group of people who make podcasts for young people. It's called Kids Listen. And he wrote the book The Meat Shower, the mostly true tale of an odd and somewhat edible occurrence. Join us here on The Morning Show on Fridays from 8 until 9. You can be part of this Explorers Club. We talk about science, animals, disasters, mysteries, drawing, and more. With some of the coolest people you'll find anywhere, it's all geared toward elementary and middle school students. We're planning on this through the end of July, and you can send your ideas for what we should talk about to this email address. It's kids@WPR.org. You can also visit us at WPR.org/kids. I'm Keely Boltina. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.